Welcome to Rubyology number 77, another Ruby in the Enterprise episode. I'm here with Aaron Hawkins with the University of Phoenix, a company of the Apollo Group. Certainly anybody that works in tech or on the internet all day has seen UOP ads online ad nauseum sometimes. It's funny because I'm actually a student there currently, and I still see their ads and get their mailings for signing up for University of Phoenix. And so, Aaron, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and the nature of University of Phoenix?
Sure. Well, I'm sure you've seen the ads. I think we are the number one ad buy on the internet, and that's pretty neat to see your company everywhere advertised. I'm a Java software engineer, and been doing that for almost 10 years now, I guess. And I do Java day, Ruby and Rails at night on the side, and been working with the University of Phoenix for a little over 3 years now.
Cool. So when you say University of Phoenix is like possibly the number one ad consumer on the internet, I mean, how many people actually go to University of Phoenix compared to our normal state university? Is it hundreds of thousands?
There are, I think, current enrollment. I don't know the exact numbers, or if I had them, I probably couldn't give them out. But I think roughly, I know we have a lot.
So probably more than a couple hundred thousand, at least worldwide.
Yeah.
I think. Very interesting. And then how many people actually work within IT cumulatively? I'm sure there's a lot of different divisions and everything like that.
There are different divisions. I know the division I'm in, we support just the business, all the applications that run the actual school, like signing up, registering, scheduling, getting teachers and students' schedules right, making sure they're doing the right degrees to graduate. There's at least 200 developers in that group. We have probably 40 teams or so, and we do lots of there are any number of projects going on with that within those groups.
Hmm. And then, what specific technologies are in use?
In our group, it's mostly Java enterprise stuff, but there are some .NET stuff, especially in more of the classroom applications. There are sort of two schools of thought. There's an old corporate, I guess there's a .NET side and a more of a Java side, and so those two coexist there.
And so how does Ruby really fit into all of this? Because I hear different stories on different projects potentially being done in Ruby.
Ruby, it's an interesting story. So that it crops up based on the project. So a lot of the project teams have a lot of freedom to choose what they want to do to solve the business problem they're presented with. And a lot of them, the more forward-thinking ones, will look at Ruby and say, hey, let's try to do Ruby. Let's do some Ruby stuff. That's fun. Maybe it can help us solve our problem a little bit better. So there are lots of sort of test implementations. Like there'll be a sort of a supporting side, one-off app that will have Rails development stuff and things like that. We did try to do some more Ruby solutions for some mainstream apps, but we got a little bit of pushback. They're a little risk averse that way.
Are there any things in production right now that as a student or somebody just visiting the site that you could see that are actually running Ruby?
Nothing that external. They're all internal supporting apps if they're running in production. So, but on the other hand, all the apps, they're deployed using Ruby.
So you say there's a lot of pushback, and do you know what the specific reasons were? That is it really just the people don't know Ruby, or it's not supported, all of the above?
I think there's some. General is a large company. They're not in a position to experiment, and especially with some core products. And so I was working on one of the core products, and we actually did deploy some a Rails app and some Ruby solutions. The objections we make got is that there just weren't a lot of people in the company that knew it. So we had a small group of experts, but we had, I don't know, anyway, 200 Java developers. And so by writing something they didn't know, it made it less portable. So that was one of the risks, and there are ways to manage that, of course, but it's just something that you got to pick your risks, right?
Yeah, certainly, and I can understand. We had a guy here from a large bank for the previous Ruby and Enterprise episode, and he was saying similar things, which I think make a lot of sense. As a large company, you're going to hire developers in specific technology, and you hired them for that technology, and there isn't necessarily a lot of motivation to start switching things up mid-game. Even if there are potential other time savings and whatnot, just because the talent is mm-hmm. already trained in a specific area.
It's trained. And so they like to, as much as possible, be able to have cogs that can switch in and out of different projects and different teams. And there's a lot of movement between the teams. Which is good, and so Jen, there's a lot of smart people, and they want to use new cutting edge technology, but they want to focus at least on their core bread and butter things to something to minimize that risk. I think another thing that happened is that we had a lot of people that knew Ruby on Rails, and were really big into it, and we lost a lot of those people.
What about Groovy and Grails and all specifically Java friendly Ruby technologies, and JRuby being another cool one?
Yeah, so that's an interesting question. Being a heavy Java shop, do you think JRuby would be a good option? And I think it would for many of the projects. So I think the success criteria, you'd have to pick something that was, again, it's not a super high-profile project. You have to sneak it in there. Once they can see, I get some experience with it. The things we ran into while we were deploying our Rails app, the release process, they didn't have any concept of how to do a Ruby on Rails release. And so we had to tune on the servers and give a lot of hand-holding, and got a lot of pushback because we were breaking their procedures.
Because I assume it's because it's completely unlike all of the existing procedures.
Yes, it's like one-touch run cap. we set up Webistrano, and it was a really nice solution, I thought, for deploying it. But we did get pushback that's, hey, we have to change this to fit into our normal
to be
process.
More complicated, essentially.
Yeah, so that was another challenge then. But we actually did get it deployed and running for a while, and so that was really cool.
Well, that's awesome. Yeah, I could see, especially with Capistrano kind of being a de facto mechanism for deployment, a lot of people seeing that as threatening. If your job is to be the deployment guy at a given organization for a bunch of projects, I could definitely see the threat of being replaced by scripts.
Well, they're already pretty good at being human executable batch files, and they're actually using Ruby for that. They have the XML build instructions, and then they think they use Ruby to check out the code and build it and then tag it and move it somewhere else. So, I mean, they are using Ruby from that area. So, and that's one thing that I think we got as far as we did.
Oh, because there's Ruby also at the systems level too, and a lot of scripting and automation there.
Yeah, we had some Ruby guys that really built that up, and unfortunately they left too. So.
But I guess that kind of proves the point also on why there's some good thinking sometimes to this logic that we shouldn't just change everything up right away, because they had some good people. They probably got some good stuff done real fast, but then when they left, the majority of the population of developers and administrators didn't really have the experience to deal with that.
And so that's why you need to mitigate that risk and recognize that. And so we had like a Ruby training sessions at lunch and video sessions and things like that to try and get other people interested. And generally, it's really well accepted. People like picking them up. We would show screencasts during lunch, things like that.
So within the context of enterprise use, were there any technological pros and cons of using Ruby? And if there are real specific things, that's okay too. Any things that people working at similar large companies might have problems with?
Well, if I don't know if you use Oracle, but we yes. did run into some problems using Oracle. Not a lot of people were using that, and so the Oracle drivers for Ruby have some unique qualities. We had to do some patches and things, but
oh, really? Is the state of the was it instant client driver for Oracle? Is that not fabulous still?
No, it's not fabulous. And we were able to get around all the problems, but like there's like some guy's fork on GitHub is like the sort of now real.
It's the one everybody uses.
It's the one everybody uses, and so
that's pretty sad.
We had a problem with Oracle wanted the ID columns to be big ints, and so that totally messed up all of Rails. So, but it wasn't too hard to fix. We just fixed up an initializer to treat them as numbers again. Hmm. So nothing major, but you can run into that. What we did find is that it. For one problem domain was another problem we're working on, and Ruby provides a really beautiful, elegant model for fixing the problem. And when we had to move back away from that, that's one thing I was really sad about, because the Rails app we deployed is just a web app. I mean, that was cool, but not necessarily. It's not something you couldn't do with a lot of work and tears and sweat in Java. But the Ruby solution we had was really elegant, just because of how dynamic a language it was.
Do you think that Ruby and Rails have a bigger future at University of Phoenix? Are we going to be seeing more of this in the future, or do you think it's just kind of going to be a latent technology that really doesn't get used?
No, I think there are places for it, and I think you definitely choose the place. I think our big problem was the the product we're on was so high, high risk, high reward. There's not a lot of projects in our group that the vice president will call up the VP of development and say, hey, why is this thing down? And this was one of those projects. And so everybody involved just didn't want to take that risk with it. But we'll go on. And I know there are other Ruby projects. And like I said, the one-off sort of side-based things. And so I think in the future, it will still continue to grow.
So it sounds like it is on the radar then of higher-ups, higher-level directors.
They use it personally at home.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So in the conversation I'm having, I completely understand why we'd want to maybe go away from it for the business risk, but they love it as a technology and as a choice and would like to see maybe some growth in the department and the right application using. Definitely, they mentioned prototyping and some other things like that. They're definitely open to it.
What about integration with other web services or any kind of, it's really just strange, sort of tricky integration with other things. Have there been any problems with that? Because I know personally, I really don't like doing SOAP in Ruby, and I always go off on these rants on how awkward it is to write SOAP web service clients for Ruby.
Wow. Yeah, we had some integration with some Hessian services, and that was painless. Really, really straightforward. The Ruby Hessian libraries were easy to use.
Cool.
And so the other integration we had were just over HTTP services. Using like REST principles, not anything necessarily really formal, just someone would call a URL, we'd return data, or we'd call their URL and get their data back and parse it. So and from that aspect, we didn't have any kind of problems.
Any performance observations?
It performed wonderfully. And we didn't get a lot of chance to measure and tune it, but it definitely wasn't slower than what we were currently doing. But a lot of that has to do with the architecture we're using, not necessarily I didn't see any negative impact on performance.
And so it sounded like there wasn't a whole lot of pushback either in terms of the hosting environments. Was that they were Linux based to start with?
Yeah, Linux based, and we were actually pioneering. We like to pioneer lots of things. We were doing rolling out a new virtual servers initiative, and so we had those set up and configured. And I actually spent a lot of time trying to work that out and getting. Writing Capistrano scripts to install everything just correctly because they didn't want us to touch the server. So I could say, hey, but they'll run a command for us. So I could say,
and you put arbitrary stuff in that.
Yeah. So I had a command set install and download and MySQL and Oracle and set up the clients and install Ruby and do all the setup and configuration. So yeah, we got some good experience doing that. And I said that Rails deployments come leaps and bounds. We were using ModRails, the Fusion, and that was painless and wonderful.
With your internal integration projects, were there any specific issues with firewalls or proxying, anything like that? And I ask just because I've seen these sorts of issues before, and it can be kind of painful if the libraries you're using and your specific gem clients don't support the use through proxies.
We really didn't run into a lot of that other than we had to let the network teams know what ports we wanted to open up and let people through. But other than that, nothing weird.
Cool. Well, do you have any additional thoughts or things, maybe one or two things you'd like to plug so people can learn more about you?
Sure. I'm a nascent blogger. You can check my blog out at aaronkhawkins.com. I also, with a friend of mine, we have a t-shirt site. It's called codesmack.com. So it's sort of just, we used to carpool together. And so these are some funny t-shirts we thought up while we're driving. They're funny to us, at least. So,
and they are definitely funny. I highly recommend you check codesmack.com out. If you were happened to be at RailsConf 2007, I believe these guys were kind of standing in the halls, selling some shirts. There's a funny like I heart DHH. I think was a cool one.
Yeah, something about that. Our number one seller is a shirt with a finger pointing. Someone else says he broke the build. So there's a lot of there's some build breakage shirts, some testing shirts. People buy them. I think it's punishment to make people wear them. But
well, thank you for joining us today, Aaron. And again, this is Preston Lee signing off on the Rubyology podcast. If you're looking for any sort of Ruby web development projects or pretty much anything in web or Ruby related, check out openrain.com, and we'll get you set up. Thanks for joining us. We'll catch you next time.